This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone. Now we're heading into Twitch's lesser precinct, not esports, but IRL, in real life. And I start with a conversation with a friend down the hall. So, Chad Abumrad of Radiolab.
Yes.
How much do you interact with people on a digital platform? Facebook, Twitter, comments, any of that? How much?
As little as I can manage.
How come?
I bumped up against my own personality, which is I'm a deep introvert. So I did do a lot of social media stuff, and then I kind of got overloaded, and I'm taking a break.
How would you feel if your success were measured by how many people were watching you working?
That is my personal definition of hell, frankly. I hate it when people look over my shoulder when I'm trying to sort out an edit or figure out the right turn of phrase.
And not just look over your shoulder, but speak loudly.
Ugh, that's just a nightmare to me. That's because I already have all those voices in my head, and
yeah.
I need to shush them in order to actually work. So to have them in my head and out of my head, that seems too hard.
What if this relationship with the chat was as intense as a romance, or as roiling as a romance gone bad?
You don't mean in a sexual way, do you?
I mean as emotionally intense.
Wow.
And in order for you to be successful, you'd have to return a little bit of that. But you didn't know necessarily who any of these people were, and they were both as kind as a person can be and as mean.
I'm just trying to imagine that. What are you thinking about when you ask that question?
I'm thinking about Twitch.
Huh. It's interesting. I mean, you've answered a question for me, actually. I stumbled onto Twitch, so about a year, maybe 2 years ago at this point. I took a break from Radiolab.
Mm-hmm.
I was super burnt out.
Mm-hmm.
And I just basically sat in my room for 4 months. I was trying to figure out some technical thing about a music project I was working on. At some point, I ended up on YouTube looking at a screen recording from a guy named Deadmau5, who's a kind of cheesy, like, IDM techno producer, but very successful.
Electronic dance music.
Yes. And he used a particular program that I was trying to learn, and so for some reason I ended up sitting in front of a recording of his screen and watching him work. It's unedited, and so you're watching someone sort of click, click, edit, edit, move a sound, move it back, stretch it. No, that didn't work. Throw it away. Open up a new session. At some point, he just stopped and went to the bathroom for 10 minutes, and you're just looking at an empty screen.
And you stayed.
I stayed for some reason. I was like, I found it mesmerizing because you were watching someone think, you know? Like, usually what you experience on the other end of any media is some sort of edited, pre-packaged, mediated thing. And it was deeply meditative. It adjusted time in a certain way. And so I watched this whole thing, and then I call up the next one, and I called up the next one, and there's like hours and hours of Deadmau5 doing this. Sometimes you can see like a little thumbnail video of the camera looking at him, and I would stare at that and be like, oh, what is that gear next to him? And then there was, see, you just answered for me the question. There was this chat stream happening in one corner of the screen.
And this was on YouTube.
And I wasn't really sure who these people are that were chatting, but apparently I was a time-delayed member of a large community who was watching him. This is so weird. We're all watching this guy work. It's almost as intimate as sex. I mean, it's funny. I don't even like the music. But the process was so fascinating. And I started going through his discography and then going back to these Twitch screen captures where you could see him making those songs. He's playing around and then some mistake will happen that will generate an idea, and you can see him latch onto it, and then he starts building it out. And then you fast forward 25 minutes in the video, and you're like, oh my God, there's the beat. Ooh, and he just found the bass line. It's super addictive. I spent, I would say, in total a week watching nothing but this guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's a complete asshole. And I still find the whole thing a little mystifying, but I think back to that, and there's something deeply comfortable about it.
When my kids were little, we had a VCR. We'd play them tape sometimes, you know, the neglect-o-matic. Mm-hmm. And one day it didn't work, and we opened up the drawer, and they had stuck their lunch in there, which was broccoli and chicken, because they thought it would come on TV.
Just stepping out mm-hmm. of the conversation, I think that your kids putting their sandwiches into the TV is a good ending. Because what it suggests is that it's a primal desire we have. We want to interact, and we want to manipulate the people on the screen. And somehow now here we are.
We understand what the screen is supposed to be, mm-hmm. but we seem to be getting closer and closer to what my kids thought it was. You can talk to the guy on the screen. You can ensure that that guy on the screen gets a meal or not.
Yeah, yeah.
I tell Jad about VP Gloves, who crossed the country for a job offered by a guy named Joe and found himself dumped at a McDonald's in San Luis Obispo. He was already streaming, but now he was homeless. He tapped his viewers to help cover the cost of a cheap room and a meal.
So this guy was homeless and he was streaming his own homeless life, and then
yes.
people started giving him money?
Right.
How did this guy get an audience to begin with? Is he a super charismatic, funny type of person? Or?
He's shy, low-key. He is nice.
Wow.
There seems to be no pretense to him, and also very little resistance to the influence of the people who watch him.
Hmm. So the people who watch him will say, hey, take a left, and he'll just take a left kind of thing?
Sure.
Wow. There's something kind of beautiful and kind of creepy about that, you know?
You want to come to like a little show going on?
Should we go, boys? Follow him or not? Follow him?
Follow. We can smoke.
Are you ready to hear VP Gloves?
I am, yeah.
We managed to get Gloves and Weezer, who moderates Gloves' chat, and Gloves' girlfriend, Neely, into a studio. We were recording, he was streaming, and I could watch the chat weighing in. You're not nervous, are you?
A little bit.
Just introduce yourself. Who are you? How old are you? Where are you from?
Okay, I'm VP Gloves from Twitch TV. I'm 38.
You don't want to use your real name?
Alex.
Now, Alex, Gloves, produces heaps of streaming content practically every waking moment, and sometimes draws a couple thousand viewers, some of whom contribute regularly to support his life on the edge. And they've been doing it since March.
Like, every day I seem to be able to raise the money to stay indoors and eat. It just seemed like it was doable. You know, it was like long hours and whatever, but it was working out. So it felt good. I felt safe in a way, like these guys kept me safe.
Why do you think people watch you?
Some people like to just see me talk to them, just kind of hang out. Other people really like me to be out and about and interacting with other people. That's what they like. Other people like the story. Like, probably most of them only tune in when there's a level of drama, like when my life's at a really unstable point. Like, am I going to make the hotel goal for the day, or how am I going to eat? What's going to happen with Joe or with whoever?
Joe's the guy with the job that never materialized. He's a dark character in the saga. And he dated Gloves' erstwhile best friend, Amanda. Viewers play in Gloves' story like it was a sandbox. Some pay for shelter, others, just for fun, call the cops on him.
Someone once put it, I think it was Janice, said it was like playing Homeless Sky Simulator.
How does that feel?
It feels fine, I guess. I'm okay with it. I mean, it's a great improvement on my situation before.
So how did you get Weezer in your life?
He was a troll at first. I was staying at the homestead in San Luis Obispo, and someone in the stream had doxed my location, calling the hotel, and just harassing me and then basically extorted me into making Weezer a mod.
How did they extort this concession from you to add a moderator?
Because they knew my hotel and the room and stuff, so like they just put the pressure on me. Like, it's happened to me before, and it's like so embarrassing. Go down the next day and have the front desk asking, like, who was calling? Like, that guy was so rude. Like, I couldn't handle that, so I just did whatever they said.
And the idea was to pick any random viewer.
The random stranger on the phone chose him, who we don't know who it was, called me and said, Mod Weezinator.
It definitely wasn't me.
It wasn't.
We're hearing from Weezinator right now. Tell me about how you became interested in VP Glove's channel.
My friends and I usually watch gaming streams. We were just scrolling through, and he just seemed interesting at the time. I think he was promoting his flat Earth theory.
I believe the Earth, it's sort of like a cone, okay? And underneath is a giant tortoise.
He also said he was not sure where he was going to stay for the next night. So he was raising a funding goal on there. So my trolling was he was $50 short or something for his stay for the weekend.
Uh-huh.
And so we donated $50 to him, and he would write, "The Earth is round," on his forehead.
Uh-huh.
And that's what he did.
So here's the interesting twist. You decided to invite Alex to come and live with you and your wife at your home in Riverside, and he has.
We had watched him for at least 15 hours plus a day for over a month. So I work on the computer from home most of the time. So I would have his stream running on like a second monitor. It was just really intriguing to see what was going to happen with him, as well as his backstory of Joe and his friend Amanda. He would kind of promote like what's going to happen next. If something would happen, I could go there and interact with the chat and talk to people about it.
You were essentially inviting someone you'd never actually met into your home for an indefinite period.
We didn't necessarily feel like we didn't know him, because we had been watching him for, at that point, maybe 2 months now, a large portion of the day, and we wanted to help him out.
There seems to be a fair amount of skepticism that I'm seeing on the feed here. Things about a Porsche and never sleeping outside, an emoji that represents a resident dreamer or something. I mean, I know that I'm out of my depth. There's a lot going on.
Yeah, there is a lot going on in chat. And through the course of meeting him, I've realized that chat is its own beast. At the end of the day, though, I genuinely believe if we met them in real life, the majority of them would be the nicest people there is. And I believe that because we have met other people from the chat. Their identity has been released to the chat room. And when that happens, and when you're being your real self, then you are nicer. And a lot of the people in the chat play this role of a troll, and they talk a lot of crap to each other. I guess I'm somewhat the same way. When I'm just in chat, I start yelling at people in the chat because it's fun and entertaining. But then, you know, if you met me in real life, I'm actually fairly calm and nice. And, you know, I wouldn't hate on anybody. But the community inside the chat room when you're not face-to-face with somebody is very different.
So what do you do as a moderator? Do you block people?
It's very rare that you let people just kind of go off and say whatever they want and do whatever they want in the chat. And that's what a moderator is for. In Alex's case, his chat and his community kind of feeds off of the craziness that's happening. And a lot of it is borderline not acceptable. But because of the drama and situation that he's in, those are the type of people that like to stick around. So he kind of let it be a little bit less strict.
Hi, Neely. I see you sitting right next to him there.
Hi.
How did you guys meet?
He was out streaming one night in downtown Riverside, and a couple friends of mine had dragged me out to one of the bars. And we were watching him walk around with the camera and a giant rainbow-colored hula hoop. And then he kept kind of walking back and forth in front of us, and I started yelling at him about the hula hoop. And he came over, and so I basically left my friends and wandered off with the stranger down the street.
Jad was fascinated by Neely's entry into the story because it was engineered by the chat, which had saddled gloves with the hula hoop and the directive to catch a woman's eye.
Someone told him to do a hula hoop public display of humiliation that ended up getting him
the girl
to meet somebody.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so complicated. That's so complicated.
Actually, it was Chat that asked her out. He was instructed to hand her his phone, and she could see the chat saying, go out with him, go out with him.
Wow, it's like in every moment, it's like kind of sweet and kind of abusive. It's like, go do this humiliating thing, go out with him. It's like kind of hard to parse, you know?
Yep, we walked down the street with the hoop, found a place that would let him in with an expired ID, and we sat there and we talked with Chat.
What did Chat say?
Jeez. Telling him to kiss me.
Hey, Amber, I'm out of money. Give the guy a kiss. I gotta go to bed.
For real? This is not how I'm going to first kiss gloves.
Yeah, sorry about that. They want
you're
the,
sorry
the
about it until it works, though, right?
No, like, exactly. That's not what this is about. It's just they want the payoff so bad. But, like, this is nice. This is fine. Trust me, that's not what I'm... You get it.
I believe you. You're a homeless hipster that takes your gigantic hula hoop for walks at nighttime.
They made me do that. Like, I just do what these guys tell me to do, pretty much.
So you're a cuck for these guys.
Yes.
On the internet.
I mean...
As you heard at first, they really liked her and really liked kind of having her around. And then some people just didn't like her anymore. And so they were trying to bribe me to break up with her, basically. The level of control was going, you know, up another level.
Some people probably think that they own the relationship because they got it going.
I think that's exactly how they feel. It's a weird position to be in because obviously I do feel like a weird obligation to whatever.
Why? I mean, how much of your life is yours?
It doesn't seem like a lot because, you know, they saved me. So, but yeah,
I mean, if you assert yourself, do you think you'll lose that support?
It's definitely possible that I would lose that support, definitely.
I am going to say Janis Joplin so that that person will give you $20.
Thank you.
So after some of the people in chat started turning on me, they were saying I was making the stream boring, other stuff. I went back over old videos, and it looks to me like things come in waves where, you know, they're really encouraging, but then you get a few people that will come in and sort of dominate, not be happy with the content that he's making.
So things can't go too good for me. Like, I can't be too happy or else it gets boring. We've got to take that away.
Probably people have offered you work, I'm guessing.
There are people that say they want to hire you and stuff, but it's always been like a weird, elaborate trolling attempt to like get a lot of attention. They don't see a stream broadcasting as a job and they think it's easy and they don't like the idea of you making money doing this, but yet they still watch, which is weird.
A lot of people were very supportive when his situation was more dire and he was in need of just the basics. He was just literally alone on the street. The people that followed him then aren't willing to give up that story. He's a real human being and wants real friends and wants a real life. And sometimes the chat does feel like they own it because they have donated and supported him so long.
So, Alex, what if you didn't need the financial support anymore? Would you still need the community support? Would you still need the chat?
Yeah, I think there is something that I'm chasing on here, some kind of experience or some kind of like connection with the audience. Yeah, it's not just money. There's something else. Feel like a real closeness with them. It's It's like you feel cared about. It's hard. I don't know. Just something. Yeah. There's some kind of like a magic.
Well, thank you, all three of you. It's really helped me understand this. So much appreciated.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I mean, thank you. Yeah.
There's a magic. He said he felt cared for, but nothing comes for free. As Weezer said, often we're not as good when we're anonymous. Twitch offers one new thing, the power of the chat to be heard in real time. The next advance will be when every member of the chat can be seen in real time. Every new entertainment exposes a little more of who we are as a species. If we could see ourselves in action, who knows who we could be? Twitch, do you feel me?
I have everything. I got you guys in one hand. I got Neely in the other. It's like I have everything. I'm snuggling with both of you. We're all snuggling together in the bed. Don't you guys feel it? All of us together? Or maybe out here, I'll bring you guys closer for extra snuggliness.
One more story before we go. Not about Twitch, but about our dominant connection platform, ever in the news and in our personal data. I'm talking about Facebook, a short preview of a fascinating new report from Radiolab's Simon Adler.
Down the hall from you folks here at OTM.
You betcha. We see you running around like fire ants on bits of carrion.
Yes, that is I.
Begin by telling me about the project which dovetails so beautifully with our general bailiwick.
The episode actually came out this past Thursday. Whether you know it or not, for the past 10 years, Facebook has been writing a hyper-detailed rulebook of what you can and can't say or see on Facebook. And at this point, they are enforcing this rulebook on all 2.2 billion of us users.
And what drew you to the story?
Sort of the tension here that drew me to this was trying to understand how you take something as abstract and lofty as the First Amendment and the American free speech tradition, and how do you boil that down into what essentially has become a series of if-then statements?
As in?
If there is a nipple or areola present in a photograph, it constitutes a naked breast, and so therefore, because Facebook does not allow for nudity, that photo has to come down. Unless there is a baby present in the photo that appears to be a toddler or younger and has recently finished breastfeeding, is in the act of breastfeeding, or is just about to breastfeed.
I think I see the problem. Yes.
One of the most controversial and fascinating examples was back in 2017, The Guardian leaked a training document about these guidelines. Essentially, it was a set of PowerPoint slides, and on one of the slides, they state clearly, Facebook will protect white men from hate speech, but it will not protect black children from hate speech.
Oh, yes. This is from your episode. You were talking to Jad and Robert about this, and it kind of boils down in the end to modifiers, parts of speech.
This is Monica Bicker, Facebook's head of policy.
So traditionally, we allowed speech once there was some other word in it that made it about something other than a protected characteristic.
In Facebook jargon, these are referred to as a non-protected modifier.
I just need to lie down when I hear
just
that.
Just means literally nothing to me. Give us an example of this.
Sure.
So traditionally, if you said, I don't like this religion, cab drivers.
Cab driver would be the non-protected modifier because employment is not a protected category.
Right.
And here's where things get a little wonky. So the rule stated that when you add this non-protected modifier to the protected category, in this case, the cab driver's religion,
we would allow it because we can't assume that you're hating this person because of his religion. You actually just may not like cab drivers.
So in the case of black children, children is modifying the protected category of black.
Mm-hmm.
And so children trumps black?
Age is a non-protected category.
Okay.
And so children becomes a non-protected modifier, and their childness trumps their blackness. You can say whatever you want about black children. Whereas white men, you've got race and gender both protected, so you can't attack them.
That's just a bizarre rule.
Yeah, I'll say it's, you know, I guess you can't attack black men either, or white women, or black women.
Well, yeah, so talking to some of the folks involved in writing these rules, the thought was, okay, do we want to make age a protected class? And they decided no, because then essentially, among other things, you wouldn't be able to make fun of a toddler on Facebook. If a toddler is doing something stupid and you say, God, isn't he a stupid little toddler? That would effectively be hate speech by that rule, and therefore no one could write that, and they didn't want to do that.
This is why you can't use an algorithm. Ultimately, you need someone with an eye on that.
Back in 2008, when this rule book started being written, there were 12 people in Menlo Park doing this work. Fast forward 10 years, we're now looking at somewhere around 16,000 people doing that work.
We spoke to Adrian Chen about 4 years ago about the unseen world of moderators. And apparently there was an attempt to employ a lot of people in India, but culturally they were further away from the U.S. than people in the Philippines.
Hyderabad was the first place Facebook decided to start offshoring their content moderation. These were still Facebook employees, mind you, so it wasn't being outsourced, but they were building an office in Hyderabad, and they were going to send a lot of the nudity, images flagged as being nude, to these folks in Hyderabad. So they put them through the two-week training period, and they give them their rule that they're judging against, and it says things like no male or female genitalia, no breasts, no butt cracks. And then they left this release valve in the rule at that point. This is in 2010, saying, and take down anything else that is sexually explicit.
Mm.
And what they found within moments of these folks going live was you had these moderators in India who were taking down pictures of people kissing on their wedding day because this definition of sexually explicit was so culturally bound. And so essentially the story of the development of these rules is them cranking the screws down on these tighter and tighter definitions so that culture and moderator judgment is not allowed into the equation at all.
This is a project, I imagine, that can never end. Is there any point where this is actually going to work?
I know everyone wants to hate Facebook. They're not great, but like, this is an intractable problem that they have to try to solve, but they never knew that they were creating. And I walk away from this reporting feeling that they will inevitably fail, but they have to try, and we should all be rooting for them. Because the alternative is you just have more situations like that in Sri Lanka or Myanmar where they are goofing up and people are dying as a result of it.
To hear Simon Adler's full story, which is called Post No Evil, head over to radiolab.org or the podcast app of your choice. That's it for this week's show. Producer Michael Loewinger did the heavy lifting on this one. On the Media is produced by Alana Casanova-Burgess, Leia Fetter, and John Hanrahan. We had more help from Asta Chaturvedi, and our show was edited by Brooke. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineer this week was Sam Baer.
Katya Rogers is our executive producer. Jim Schachter is WNYC's vice president for news. On the Media is a production of WNYC Studios. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
On the Media is supported by the Ford Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.